Voila. Okay, so for starters, I would like to acknowledge the work that I'll be talking about is based on a broader, multifaceted experiment in orchard organic matter and irrigation management involving not only myself, but Denise Nielsen and Jerry Nielsen, colleagues of mine at the research at the Summerland Research Center in Summerland, British Columbia, along with Kirsten Hannum, who is a postdoctoral associate who is partially with UBC Okanagan, partially with us, and as well a number of other colleagues, Mesvin Fentebil and Craig Nickel, who are here as well. And so I'll jump right into it. The Okanagan Valley, where we are doing our work, has a long history of tree fruit production. In more recent years, the grape industry has increased very rapidly, so a lot of viticulture. Here's an image of what the part of the Okanagan Valley looks like. The bottom is filled with lakes, so it has the illusion of lots of water, but it's actually a semi-arid region, and all of the production is on these dry bench lands along the side of the lake. And so it's a water-stressed basin, and historically there was a lot of overhead irrigation, but we have a lot of issues, competition from urban development and ecological requirements, salmon. And in within Canada, it's considered to be the municipality, the region with the lowest per capita water availability. And with climate change projections, which basically predict more variable snowpack in the mountains, and all of our water comes from snowpack in the mountains, as well as more variable summertime precipitation, there's an urgent need to begin reevaluating irrigation practices. And so one of the main things that's happening in the tree fruit and grape industries in the Okanagan is a switch from overhead irrigation to micro-irrigation, either drip, as we see inline drip here, or micro-sprinklers. But also there's a lot of interest in adopting practices such as the use of soil amendments, composts, for example, at the time of replanting to improve water holding capacity and distribution of moisture within the root zone. And as well, we've done a lot of work in the past, myself and Jerry and other colleagues, on the use of organic mulches. And here's a picture from one of our apple experiments, wood chip mulch and alfalfa hay mulch, again, to reduce evaporation, to enhance spatial distribution of the water coming from drip irrigators, et cetera. So these are the sort of the general trend on the directions we're going and that we're exploring. And one of the things, and we've done a lot of work in the past on response of soil biota and roots and overall orchard production to mulches, but it's always been in the context of drip irrigation, and we've come to realize that because there are also micro-sprinkler irrigation opportunities, that there's the interaction between irrigation, type of irrigation, and the use of mulches is an area that could deserve that deserves a lot more study. So this brings up the general questions. If we're altering soil moisture regimes and simultaneously altering organic matter inputs, obviously we're going to influence root zone soil ecology that can have influences on many aspects of the production system, not the least of which is overall productivity of high-quality fruit. So some of the things that we're looking at include root zone nutrient fluxes, and there was a talk a little bit earlier in another session from our group here on root zone nutrient fluxes, as well later this afternoon in another session, Fentebil et al. Are going to talk about greenhouse gas emissions from the experiment that I'll be talking about. But we're also interested in more general soil health indicators, through time, how these combinations of micro-irrigation strategies and organic matter inputs influence soil organic matter structure, microbial biomass, respiration, cation exchange, etc. Food web structure, including populations of free-living nematodes as indicators of changes in overall soil biodiversity as well as food web structure. We're also very interested in plant parasitic nematodes as a particular component. And there's a picture of some root lesion nematodes attacking a root tip. And as well, overall root growth itself. And so I have these in bold because these are the aspects of the experiments that I will be talking about, again, leaving the others for others. And this is a picture of an image from a mini rhizotron window showing some roots growing up next to it. And of course, just to reiterate, we're as we alter root zone soil hydrology as well as organic matter inputs, soil organisms are very very much influenced by water inputs. We have a special interest in the plant parasitic nematodes and their relationship with root growth, because wherever grapevines are cultivated in the world, with time, they eventually develop problems with a variety of different kinds of plant parasitic nematodes, different species of plant parasitic nematodes. As a general rule, in areas that where there's a lot of viticulture, these problems develop gradually. And as a general rule, our industry in British Columbia is relatively young, so we're just starting to see some of these problems develop. Plant parasitic nematodes are somewhat different from many other plant pathogens in that generally they're sort of a chronic stress, long-term stress on plants, and predispose them to other stresses associated with decline complexes. And this one up here on the right is what's known as the ring nematode. We have it listed here as Mesocrica xenoplax. The name keeps changing. We'll talk a little more about it later, as well the root lesion nematode that we'll be talking about. So the experiment in which we've been doing this work most recently is an irrigation by amendment or mulch experiment on grapevines. In spring of 2011, it was Merlot on SO4 rootstock was planted. We have entire rows that receive either microsprinkler or drip irrigation, so whole plot treatments. Subplot treatments involve one of the treatments is the application of compost, and this is incorrect, it says 40 megagrams per hectare. It's 40 kilograms nitrogen per hectare to the treated row. And then we have an infertigated treatment, which is kind of the conventional practice of applying chemical fertilizer through the irrigation line. Then we have a treatment where we have essentially infertigated, but we have a bark mulch, and you can see that there as well. And then we also have a bark mulch with compost treatment. So essentially we have two different types of nitrogen inputs, compost and infertigation. And then we have them with or without bark mulch. But it's a little bit complicated because the compost itself is also surface applied, and it also brings in additional organic matter. So it's not really a true factorial. Sampling and analyses. So commencing in 2012, we're sampling once a year fairly intensively. And so we've sampled at this point 2012, 13, and 14. And the idea is to sample once a year, but over many years. And so the data I'll be presenting today are essentially just the beginning of what we're learning about this. When we sample, we take three cores around the base of each of three vines, and we take the cores from essentially 30 centimeter out from in a radius around the core of the base of the vine. And so you can see from this picture on the left that's within the wetted zone for a drip irrigated plot. Okay, and generally it is. And because with drip irrigation, you tend to have a very discrete wet zone and then a drier zone within the herbicide strip. We also, and so when we take these soil cores, we're analyzing nematode communities. We pick out root fragments and measure them. And then we subject the soil samples to further chemical analyses. But for the purposes of this talk, I also want to point out that we, once every 2 weeks through each growing season, we capture images from mini rhizotron tubes that are placed in every single plot. So biweekly through the growing season, and then we analyze the images using wind rhizotron to try to understand how these different treatments influence root growth. So just to jump right into the data, we also have TDR probes in each of the plots, and so these, just to give you some background on what's happening out here, these plots show the left-hand one is for drip irrigation, the right-hand one is microsprinkler irrigation, and the different colored lines are the different subplot treatments, nitrogen amendment and mulch treatments. But the most important thing, the important take-home message is that overall, the microsprinkler ends up with much drier soil than with the drip irrigation. And that's probably the most prominent difference. As well, when we average over the growing season, in this table, the left-hand, the two blue figures there, so that's drip versus microsprinkle and average volumetric soil moisture content. But the other thing to point out in terms of major changes in the soil microclimate is basically the range of temperatures. And there we see a very strong effect of the different soil and mulch amendment and mulch treatments, with the control, the nitrogen fertigated treatment, having the greatest range of temperatures The next one being the one with compost, and then the wood chip or the bark mulch mulched plots having a much lower range of temperatures. So that's kind of the most striking difference in terms of microclimate. So we'll jump right into the data. So when we look at when we look at the distribution of roots through the entire 75 centimeter mini rhizotron tube, and then crunch the numbers, there's actually a date effect, but there's no date by interaction effect. So I've just broken the data down here into the irrigation by amendment interaction. And the main thing to note is that with the exception of where we have fertigation with mulch, in all cases, microsprinkler enhances root growth relative to the drip treatment. If we look at the root fragments that we picked from soil cores, we basically get data, and it's just a main factor effect of irrigation, and it basically supports that same general trend in that microsprinkler, we're seeing much more root biomass than under drip. Root lesion nematodes, top left-hand graph, again, very, very similar response, a very striking response. Where we have microsprinkler irrigation, much, much higher population densities of root lesion nematodes. And this is a main factor effect over the various sample dates. And there is an interaction, and the interaction comes about because under mulch, the positive effect of the microsprinkler is sort of attenuated under mulch. The ring nematode, which is potentially one of the most damaging nematodes on grapevines, is a completely opposite response, and that we're finding it is becoming more prevalent under drip irrigation. And so for Pratelynchus, at least, microsprinkler facilitates population growth, more so without mulch than with. Free-living nematodes, as indicators of overall soil biological activity, and they can also, when broken down properly, can be used as indicators of nutrient mineralization. And we have not yet done the full community analyses on these, but just total free-living nematode populations. Again, we see a very similar overall trend, not as strong, but microsprinkler irrigation, in the absence of mulch, microsprinkler irrigation tends to enhance their population densities. So microsprinkler enhances populations in the absence of mulch. So just to quickly summarize, I think I'm going to make this on time. Microsprinkler results in an overall drier root zone. Microsprinkler generally enhances root growth in populations of free-living nematodes as well as root lesion nematodes. So, you know, it's a little early in the stage of this experiment, and there are a lot of possible reasons that these co-occurrences may happen, but one possibility is that we just simply have coincidental preference for more uniformly dry soil. That would kind of point to that at this point. But, you know, it could be that it's better for root growth, which then in turn enhances population buildup of the root lesion nematodes, and the greater rhizosphere exudates then enhances buildup of the free-living nematodes. So it's these kind of disentangling these kinds of interactions to point to what's happening here is what we'll be looking to in the future as we get more data in subsequent years and see how those relationships stick together. There were some exceptions under mulch, especially with root growth. With microsprinkler, mulch seems to suppress nematode population buildup, and it may suppress root growth to a certain degree. So we have to wonder, especially in these early stages of the experiment where it's a fresh layer of wood chip mulch, perhaps there's some leaching of inhibitory compounds from the bark mulch, and perhaps we're driving a nitrogen immobilization. And there is some evidence on the nutrient dynamics work to indicate that we could be driving a nitrogen immobilization here, at least temporarily. And this is different from our previous work where we've been drip irrigating through mulch, and we have not seen obvious nitrogen immobilization such as this. And we've generally seen an enhancement with time in soil biological activity. Ring nematodes increase under drip, in contrast, and we do know from past work on ring nematodes that they do prefer wetter soil conditions, so that's consistent with past knowledge. And the relationships between the populations of parasitic nematodes and root biomass, we'll be studying this as we move through time. Early stages, overall low nematode population densities, so it could be that the roots and the nematode populations are both responding to abiotic cues, what have you, and that we haven't reached a point where there might be a density-dependent host-parasite interaction kind of driving their population dynamics. With that, I'll stop and just say thanks to some of our funding organizations, and a whole whack of students who've picked roots. Thank you. Time for questions?